This is Mac for Math This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, the good and bad of multifunction devices.
What if I told you that you could get one box that prints, scans, and copies, does it all over Wi-Fi, and costs only £55?
Chris Finn reveals which model has it all. Also coming up, great shareware, including an essential keyboard shortcut tool.
I review a lot of shareware. Lots of stuff comes onto my Mac and then eventually goes back off it again, but I really can't see that happening with Spark. And the fact that it's free as well is just astonishing.
Craig Grinnell with shareware and Q&A on this edition of Mac for Math This Week. With the resources of Mac for Math magazine, this is Mac for Math This Week. Hello everyone, I'm your host, Brad Gibson. Let's talk about multifunction devices, or what the industry calls MFDs. These are third-party boxes that combine an inkjet printer and a scanner, and they give you, among many things, the ability to copy printed material. They're convenient and pretty inexpensive when you compare them to the price of a separate printer and scanner. They've been available for a number of years, but have been tethered to our Macs by a serial or USB cable. Now, though, they've evolved and turned into wireless devices that connect via Wi-Fi and are slowly offering connectivity via USB as an extra option. So how good are these all-in-one devices, and how easy are they to set up and use? Mac for Math Deputy Editor Chris Finn has just completed an extensive group test of 5 MFDs entitled Wireless Wonders and reports his findings in the December issue of Mac for Math, which will be released in the next week. Chris joins us from the Mac for Math newsroom in Bristol right now. Hello, Chris.
Hello there, Brad.
MFDs have really improved over the years, and the addition of Wi-Fi really makes them just so much more functional, don't they?
Yeah, the thing about Wi-Fi as well is that you can drop it anywhere in your house or in your, if you've got a little office, you can just drop it anywhere there. If you're setting it up over USB, you have to have it beside your Mac, which is reasonably convenient, I guess, if you've got an iMac, but if you've got a laptop, it's not convenient at all. If you've got Wi-Fi, though, you put it anywhere at all in within range of your Wi-Fi network, and you can connect to it, scan, print, copy from anywhere.
Okay, so tell us what models you tested here. There were 5.
We went for models from Brother, Canon, Epson, HP, and Lexmark. So they range from the £55 Lexmark X4650 all the way up to the Epson Stylus Photo PX700W, which costs £178. I'd say there's models from Canon, Brother, and HP in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, you put these MFDs through 6 tests. First was how easy it was to set them up. Second was their design and how much easier that made these MFDs to use. Third was the quality of their printing. Fourth was how well they scanned printed materials. Fifth was how well they copied documents. And finally, sixth was their overall value for the money. So let's begin with setup. With the new added ability to print wirelessly, setting these printers up to use via Wi-Fi can sometimes be a daunting task. So which one stood out?
Setting things up over USB is dead easy. You plug it in, the Mac sees that there's a physical device attached to it. All you have to do is install the drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Setting them up over Wi-Fi, you've got to worry about network issues as well, and you know, WPA encryption and MAC addresses and a whole host of stuff. So there was 2 approaches the manufacturers took. With Brother, Epson, and HP, you could actually, on the devices themselves, set them up specifically just to join your network. So you actually, with the device itself, you went in and you said, join this network, this SSID, here's the password, and that's how you did it. With the others, you actually had to plug them in directly to your Mac over USB to get them configured, and then you could sort of unplug that and then move them to wherever you wanted to put them finally. That latter option has some benefits because it makes it simpler and less problem prone, but it does mean that you've got to like sort of set it upside your Mac and then set it up and then move it away again, which is a bit of a pain.
Right.
So that was the cat models from Canon and Lexmark you had to do that with. They were generally fairly easy to set up. I gave Epson a bit of a drubbing because, as traditional with Epson MFDs, it was a ridiculously convoluted setup process involving authorising multiple different modules to be installed. It really took a long time to do. The Brother was a bit of a pain to do because you, like with the Epson, you had to go through individual letters when you were entering your wireless password. You had to go in and sort of say, scroll A, B, C, D, E, find the letter you wanted, and then go on to the next one. So that wasn't particularly nice either. Lexmark actually did very well. you had to set it up tethered with USB, but it had a full big touch screen. You could go in and you could interact with the device that way, and it made it very, very simple to set up. The other really good one was the model from Lexmark, just because, apart from anything else, during the setup process, it did quite clever things like saying, hey, this computer is connected to the network Mac format. Do you want your printer to join the same network? And you just clicked yes. So intelligent little touches like that really ease the setup process.
You know, a few years back, Chris, the Wi-Fi setups were very convoluted. I guess what I'm really asking here is, in this first test, which printer was more like the Apple setup that you would have, say, with the Apple airport base station and normal Wi-Fi setup?
The HP, I think, did the best at that sort of stuff. It was a very, very intuitive thing to do. You didn't have to read the manual. You literally switched it on. You had this great big touch screen in the front, and you could touch through to say, join this, you know, scan for networks, or there's the network I want, tap it to join it. And there was a keyboard laid out, although annoyingly it was alphabetical rather than being a QWERTY keyboard. It was ABC rather than QERT. But you went in and you entered your password, and it joined it. And it was a very clean and obvious way of doing it. The HP as well supported Bonjour Zero Config Networking, so that's the thing that used to be called Rendezvous, so the Mac could discover the printer and the printer could discover the Mac at the same time, so that made it easier to do.
Okay, so the HP and the Lexmark stood out in test number one, 4 out of 5 stars. Test two was their design. How well did the manufacturer do in laying out the buttons and the touchscreen and the power cable? Tell us which MFDs did best.
Canon was actually the best. Design is, as we all say in the magazine, design is not about how well a thing looks, although that's part of it. It's about how well it's constructed and how well it's thought through. Here's one thing that I really like with the Canon. When you send something to print, it automatically drops down the paper output tray, so that if you're sitting in your living room and your MFD is in the office, what quite often happens with me is that I've forgotten that I had to put the output tray down, and the paper gets scrunched up inside the printer because it's trying to feed it out through the closed output tray.
Right.
The Canon, it drops down automatically. That's
just common sense thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fairness, one of the other ones, Epson, which generally did very badly here because it wasn't particularly well laid out. It was very poorly constructed, surprising for Epson. But one thing they did do, which is the same sort of thing, the same sort of common sense thinking, is that you know how a lot of printers these days, although only one in this group test, have the ability to print onto printable CDs and DVDs? And with that usually happens in a little tray. You've got a little special insert tray that you put the DVD in, and then you feed it through the printer. How often have you lost those trays? You know, it's an easy thing to do. It's like the very special key to bleed your radiator or something. You're bound to lose it sooner or later.
Don't tell me they built it in.
They built it in. And in fact, there's a little button you press and it ejects this little tray. You put your CD in and print onto it. So it's built in. It's tethered. You're not going to lose it. Really good thinking.
Really good thinking. Absolutely. Okay, so in test two, the Canon stood out 5 out of 5 stars, followed by the HP at 4 out of 5, the Lexmark 3 out of 5, and the Epson and the Brother at 2 out of 5. Your third test was the quality of the printing, and there were some major differences here, right?
There really were. I mean, we were expecting. Canon does seem to do very, very well just now, both with, or rather, with its digital stills cameras, video cameras, printers and scanners. So it was no surprise really to see the Canon MP620 really shone. I mean, the print quality was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Blacks were rich and deep and crisp. Colours were very, very well rendered. Detail was very sharp. At the other end of the scale was the stuff from Brother, which was very wishy-washy, and the characters were really, really poorly formed. HP did very well. HP does crack, always has done absolutely brilliant text. If you're predominantly doing text printing in general, I think an HP inkjet printer is a really good way to go, because the text was absolutely phenomenal. Surprising failure, though, from Epson. Epson were used to creating some very, very competent printers.
Yeah.
The results here were very, very lackluster, certainly for the money. I mean, it's £178, it's the most expensive printer on test, and the results were a little bit grey, they lacked sort of punch and impact, mm-hmm. and the characters weren't particularly well formed either. So, good job for Canon, good job for HP. Lexmark was reasonable, as was Epson. Brother, not great.
Okay, so Canon HP 5 out of 5 in test number 3 for printing. Test 4, was there scanning capability?
So again, Brother really didn't do itself proud here. Although, to be honest, none of the printers really shone. None of the scanners really shone. They were fine. I mean, for most people, they're going to be scanning in photographs, and the quality's not going to be up to the level you get from putting it into a bureau or getting somebody to scan it professionally. But, you know, they were okay. The Brother, though, was very, very poor. The scans were very soft. They really lacked detail. The software wasn't great at all. The results in absolute terms from the Epson were the best. But even there, you needed to do a little bit of manual tweaking to get the results that you really, really wanted to do. The other thing to point out is that while all these printers happily did network printing, we had problems getting them to do network scanning. The idea is that you could put the document on the scanner and then from your Mac say, okay, scan the document that's on that scanner.
Right.
But we couldn't get the models from Epson and Lexmark to do it. They should be able to do it.
Right.
And in theory, it's possible. But after wrestling with it for a couple of days, we just couldn't get it to work.
Chris, what I really read in this test 4 from you is that while they did okay, all these did okay in terms of scanning pretty much, except for the Brother, that really they weren't as good as a standalone scanner.
It depends what sort of price you're talking about. If you're thinking about spending £50, £100 on a scanner, they're as good as, because it's the same basic technology. Scanning really has sort of matured.
Right.
If you want to do very, very high-end scanning from even consumer brands such as Epson, you should be looking to spend £300 or £400 on a really good standalone scanner. For most people, though, the inbuilt scanners with these devices will do very well. One big tick for HP in this, even though the results weren't particularly good, was that it actually had the facility to scan negatives and slides as well. It was going to be great if you're going to digitize your media collection.
Yeah, very nice functionality there. Okay, Epson stood out here at 4 out of 5 stars in terms of scanning. Test 5 was how well they produced copies, and the differences here were as wide as black and white.
Yeah, and in fact, black and white was one area where Brother, again, did very, very poorly. The results were incredibly washed out and very, very slow as well. Canon did cracking as well, as you'd expect from such a good printer. The quality of the scanner was also pretty reasonable. But both Brother and Epson managed to produce these incredibly dull scans. I was really disappointed with them.
Really?
The model from HP sort of went a bit too far the other way. HP, in my experience, has this ridiculous tendency to really over-egg the pudding with sort of saturation, and the blacks were ridiculous, and they actually started to, because it was boosting the contrast so much, you began to destroy some of the detail and the subtle gradations and some of the things that we were copying.
Mm-hmm.
So Canon and HP both did reasonably well, depending on what you want the scanners for. HP, again, very good for text. But Brother and Epson, really bad. I mean, Brother is a cheap printer. That's an £88 printer, and you do quite a lot of features for that. But it wasn't all that great. But Epson, I mean, come on, Epson. This is a company that should be producing absolutely market-leading products. But this big thing we have in here, the PX700W, is £178, and it just produced very, very mediocre results.
Wow. Okay, so Canon and HP, 4 out of 5 in terms of test 5 for copying. And our final test was overall value for the money. Tell us what you found.
Okay, here, Lexmark gets a big thumbs up from me. This is a Wi-Fi MFD. It's a printer, copier, scanner that sits in your network, and it costs £55. You know, it's really, really, really ridiculous value for money. In fact, you know, somebody must be getting screwed over somewhere. But it's a very, very good value for money product. One bad thing about it is that the running cost will be reasonably high, because it's the only printer in this group that uses a tri-color and a black cartridge. All the other cartridges in all the other printers are individual ink tanks, for the cyan, magenta, and yellow, and then a separate one for the black again.
So you're going to save a lot of money in terms of the printer itself, but in terms of the cartridges, a different story.
Absolutely. If you only print black, or if you rarely print color, it's going to be okay. Or if you're a fairly low-volume user overall, or if you're in a very tight initial budget and you know, you're going off to university or something like that, then it will do everything, pretty much everything you need. Big thumbs up. 5 out of 5. I would have given 6 out of 5 if I could for the Lexmark for value for money. Very good. The HP as well, though, was very good value for money. It was not that much cheaper than the top-of-the-range Epson. It was £175, but you got a lot for that. In fact, you even got a CD burner built into the MFD. Now, you might think, what the hell's the point in that? But the point is that because there's media card slots in the front, you can back from a trip, you can put your camera, take your camera card out of the camera, put it into the printer, you can print your photographs directly, and you can also burn them onto a CD, so you can back them up onto CD, either as a straight backup solution, or because you want to share them with friends and relatives all over the world. So there was actually a lot of really good features and really good stuff in from HP. As you probably expect from the way I've been talking up until now, 1 star for Epson here, the most expensive MFD on test, and really, really mediocre results.
Yeah, a hefty £178 price tag for the Epson Stylus Photo. All right, the HP and the Lexmark, they really stood out here, 5 out of 5 in the value for money test. All right, so Chris, let's get right down to it. What was the best printer overall in this test?
Well, it should come as no surprise now, Canon. It was a really, really good little bundle. It's £108, as it was when I wrote the group test. I've since been on to Amazon to have a look at the prices on there, and it's now selling for about £100. So for £100, you're getting a very, very good printer, pretty decent scanner, a very good and fast copier. It's all packaged up in a really, really nice and well thought through case. Things like the fact that there's the two paper trays. As well, the user interface for it is really nice. It's a bit like an iPod. In fact, I wonder how they got away with it. But the control system is like a sort of turny click wheel with a big button in the middle that you just use that to navigate around the system. It's a very intuitive system, even though there's a bit few too many buttons and a little bit of confusion can be generated from it. The ultimate test of something like a multifunction device or multifunction printers or something it's called is the quality of its output. And Canon really is still at the top of its game from print quality just now.
All right, so the Canon MP620, 4.5 out of 5 stars, it was the winner overall, and you wrote, quote, "The mix of stellar print quality and intelligent design decisions means the Canon MP620 is a great buy," unquote, and I think it just about says it all. Chris, thanks for reviewing this group test with us. We'll see you again.
No problem, Brad. Hope to see you soon.
Chris Finn is deputy editor of MacFormat. His group test of multifunction devices appears on page 104 in the December issue of MacFormat. We tell you all the time about MacFormat magazine on our show. Now let me tell you about a special edition of MacFormat, all about the iPhone. If you're thinking about buying one, already own one, or just want to find out more about them, MacFormat's Essential iPhone Handbook will tell you everything that you need to know. You'll find simple guides to how all the iPhone's features work, like visual voicemail, email, web browsing, and music, plus how to install third-party apps and which ones are the best. We've also got sections answering common iPhone questions and reviews of the latest iPhone accessories. That and so much more, all in the new MacFormat's Essential iPhone Handbook. You can find it on newsstands now in the UK and US, or you can order online through the enhanced podcast link that you're seeing right now if you're watching on your desktop or laptop Mac. We'll have various interviews with the handbook's editor, Chris Finn, over the next few weeks on this podcast, but I urge you to check out the Essential iPhone Handbook on sale now at a newsagent or a bookstore near you. A tool for creating keyboard shortcuts and an application to rate iTunes tracks. Those are the two shareware picks, both free shareware picks, we'll review right now with Craig Grinnell from the November issue. And Craig joins us from London. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Brad.
Craig, you've got two great shareware picks for November, and let's begin with Spark from Shadow Lab at shadowlab.org. You can get to it through our enhanced podcast link in the show right now. Now, this is a tool for creating system-wide keyboard shortcuts. So what kind of things can you use it for?
Well, I mostly use Spark for rapidly launching or bringing applications to the front and for accessing folders and documents on my hard drive. For example, I have these kind of systems that I've built up really tuned directly into my muscle memory now. I basically can't do without Spark on a Mac. But I assign Control plus Option plus a letter to applications. So Control Option S opens Safari and so on. And Control Shift and a letter to open specific folders. So Control Shift D opens my documents folder. And I've also got some function keys on my keyboard assigned to specific documents like my boilerplates folder for magazine articles. The thing is, Spark also provides a whole bunch of other options. You can take things much, much further. So for example, you can create shortcuts to drive scripts, control iTunes, and also do various things with apps and folders. So although you can open an application with Spark, you can also set the application to launch hidden, hide other apps when it launches, all sorts of things. And with documents, you can define shortcuts to open a selection in Finder with a specific application. It's really a very, very flexible piece of freeware.
Yeah, it does sound very flexible. Now, you've talked about a lot of things that Spark does. How easy is it to define all these things?
One like some similar applications, you might remember we spoke about Keyboard Maestro a few months back.
Right.
Spark is basically idiot-proof. That's pretty much how I describe it. The interface is very, very, very simple indeed, very straightforward. But there's a lot of power under the hood for the users that need it. So in that essence, it's a very Apple-like application. And basically, shortcuts are built by using a drop-down menu to select the type of shortcut you want. You put in a keyboard shortcut, you select the item that it's referring to, and in a basic sense, that's it. But then you also have some other options sort of buried slightly under the hood if you want to take things further.
Mm-hmm. But now this is the background application, and those things aren't always known for being stable. So how is Spark in its use, and how does it affect your system?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I've not noticed Spark affecting my system at all. I've been running a beta version of this, or different beta versions, in fact, all year, two different Macs. I've had almost no problems whatsoever. I mean, Spark itself may be locked up twice in all that time, and all that was required was for me to open Spark and restart its background process. But it's certainly never, you know, taken down my app, my Mac, or done anything really disastrous. And frankly, two lockups in months and months and months, that actually makes it one of the most stable apps out there, I think.
Right. Now, you gave this 5 out of 5 stars and a Mac Format Choice Award. Let me just read what you wrote here. Quote, one of the best and most useful pieces of freeware available for the Mac, utterly essential, unquote. I think it pretty much speaks for it, doesn't it?
Pretty much. I mean, and I totally and utterly stand by that. This is the kind of application that's just, it's stayed glued to my system ever since I installed it. Like Default Folder 10 is another one of those apps that I absolutely love. You know, I review a lot of shareware. You know, lots of stuff comes onto my Mac and then eventually goes back off it again. But I really can't see that happening with Spark. And the fact that it's free as well, it's just astonishing. I, you know, urge everyone to check it out right now.
All right, Spark version 3.0b8 is the version that Craig tested. And don't forget, also in the November issue on page 60 is a fantastic how-to on how to create keyboard shortcuts using Spark. You'll want to check that out as well. All right, let's move on to our second and final product, also free from Potion Factory, and it's I Love Stars version 2.1 from PotionFactory.com. Don't forget, you can get to it through the enhanced podcast link. So, I Love Stars, what does this application do, Craig?
Well, this is one of those one-shot apps that I've been looking for absolutely ages, or at least a decent implementation of it. What it enables you to do is rate iTunes tracks from your menu bar. Simply put, you click on stars in your menu bar, and that rates an iTunes track, and that's it.
And presumably, seeing as you wanted to talk about I Love Stars today, it really works well.
Well, it does. It really works brilliantly. And the thing is with applications as simple as this, people kind of think, you know, they kind of throw away, must be easy to do, you know, dead simple. But the thing is, they're absolute garbage unless they do their job very well. In fact, almost flawlessly.
Right.
And the thing is with I Love Stars, it's responsive. It hasn't crashed on me yet. It really, really does the job. You kind of look at other iTunes add-ons, stuff that is sort of similar notification type apps. Sometimes they take ages to register a change in your track. You know, you change your track in iTunes, and then, you know, a minute later the app kind of goes, oh, hang on, you've changed your track. Mm-hmm. Here's some new information.
Yeah.
I Love Stars doesn't do that. It's pretty much immediate. And it also doesn't take up much background resource either. It's a really, really great little app.
Now, you mentioned in the review that using I Love Stars, you can do that in tandem with iTunes menu. Tell us about that.
Well, I figure the menu bar in most systems, you know, most people are using sort of widescreen monitors now, and they have kind of a lot of space up there.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're using something like Photoshop, you know, which has got tons of menus across the top,
right.
Chances are you can have this sort of gap on the right-hand side. The thing is, I always wanted to have my current iTunes track and rating displayed there. You know, you get a lot of apps, and they'll say, oh, you know, we do this lovely little window that appears on the screen. Well, I don't want to waste space on the screen, you know, when I'm doing other stuff, when I'm writing articles, when I'm working in Photoshop, when I'm designing and stuff like that. But the menu bar seems the sort of perfect location for these tiny little pieces of notification. And I wanted something where I didn't have to sort of click on anything to view it and all that sort of thing. It had to be there perfectly. So these two bits of freeware do the job. You know, you have your rating, you have your iTunes track, it's sitting in the menu bar, it's always there. And neither of these applications do anything adverse to the Mac either.
Right. Now, one drawback here, you need to be running OS 10.5 Leopard to use I Love Stars, but that's not really a big deal. Really, this is a fantastic 5 out of 5 Mac Choice Award.
Well, to me, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, it's a very useful app. It does exactly what I wanted. It does, I think, what a lot of other Mac users, judging by forums, want as well. But it's not particularly well known, so I thought, hey, let's give it 5 out of 5 and maybe more people will know about it.
Exactly. All right. Craig, thanks so much for going over these. Again, Spark, which is free, and I Love Stars, which is free. And you can check them out in the November issue and also through the enhanced podcast links. Craig, thanks so much for joining us again. We'll see you next month.
Okay. See you next time.
Craig Grinnell reviews shareware for Mac Format Magazine. His latest reviews for November are on page 102 in the November issue. We have great listeners to this show, but from time to time, they run into problems with their Macs, iPods, or iPhones. Trevor Middleton helps answer your questions on each and every show and joins us again to do just that. Hello, Trevor.
Hello, hello, Brad. How are you today?
I'm great. Fantastic. Let's get right into the questions. Ah, but first, if you want to send questions to Trevor, do it at machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. Question one is from Lon Potgieter from Cape Town, South Africa. He writes, I use Drupal, which is a database-driven content management system for the web. I've installed the system on my local MacBook Pro so that I may pilot any changes to my production website. However, I'm getting cryptic error messages when I use it, something about GD Library. Can you help him?
Okay, now this one's a little bit more techie than usual, but I've included it because I seem to see more and more people who are exploiting the fact that macOS 10 has a built-in open source web server called Apache, and with a few tweaks can be turned into a very powerful database server running MySQL and PHP side by side. Now, what that means in plain English is that you can use and test loads of popular database-driven packages, such as WordPress if you're developing a blog, or PrestaShop if you want an e-commerce shop solution. Now, Lon's problem is that you also need something called GD Library, which runs alongside PHP and handles the graphics, and it's not part of the default installation that comes with macOS 10. Now, I don't want to read out lines and lines and lines of terminal code. That would probably bore listeners to death, but I have sent Lon a step-by-step guide on getting those three packages working happily together. And if anyone else wants those instructions, if they send an email to the usual address, I'll send it out to them. Brad.
Thanks so much for not reading all that code, Trevor. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, question two is from Gibran Ali from Enfield, Middlesex, who wrote us, I want to set up a security camera that I can monitor over the web from my Mac. However, most of them seem to insist I use Windows. Is there any out there that I can use with a Mac? Trevor.
Okay, well, yes, there are. And many of the ones that say they're Windows only will work with Macs too. The reason for the insistence on Windows is that many security camera monitoring systems use an ActiveX plugin for Internet Explorer. However, there are third-party Mac-compatible monitoring solutions that you can use or download once you have a camera. Now, Security Spy is a very good one, and that's available at securityspy.com, and it's compatible with a number of cameras. The only caveat I'd add is that you can't monitor the sound, as that does depend on having that troublesome ActiveX plugin. As to cameras, Swan makes a range of them, that's SWANN, and a British company called YCam specializes in IP cameras that you can monitor over the internet, so there's no excuse for having lax security now. Brad.
All right, our final question is from Andy Hewitt in Manchester, who wrote us, I tried connecting my Canon PowerShot camera to my Mac, as I'd heard that it would mount as a disc on the desktop. However, when I tried this, nothing happened. Is my camera broken? What can I do? Trevor.
No, Andy, your camera's not broken. Not all cameras do mount on the macOS 10 desktop, and I think I'm right in saying that the Canon PowerShots are one of those cameras that don't. In this case, Andy, you could buy a card reader from your local supermarket for something under a tenner, and if anyone else has the same problem, it's a good idea just to check out the Finder preferences. From the Finder menu, go to Preferences, and then General, and check that external discs are set to show on the desktop, and you will find that they do mount then, but not in Andy's case. Brad.
Trevor, thanks for going over those great questions. You help us each and every episode. Thanks again.
Hey, no problem. It's my job.
You can send Trevor your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk, and don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac for Math This Week. My thanks to Chris Finn, Craig Grinnell, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Saklaropoulo. You can always send us your comments and suggestions to macformatthisweek@futurenet.co.uk. Join us for our next edition on Monday, the 24th of November. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.